coming to Jesus. And I've had some lovely chats with some of you just saying how you relate to that. So thank you for making me feel that I'm not the only one. That helps a lot. And now, in this session, we're going to take some time to think about why we should come to Jesus. And essentially, there's just one thing that I want you to take away from this session. Oh, there we go. Oh, no, that's not it. Am I doing it or are you doing it? What's going on? Well, I can tell you, you don't have to read it on a screen, do you? The thing that I want you to take away from this session is that we need to come to Jesus because of who he is. We need to come to Jesus because of who he is. So first thing we're going to look at is the heart of Jesus. In those verses that we looked at right at the beginning, in Matthew 11, how does Jesus describe himself? So let's look back at verse 28 and 29. Then Jesus said, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls." I am humble and gentle at heart. Or as the NIV puts it, I am gentle and lowly in heart. Now, I have to confess that a lot of what I'm going to say to you in this session is completely stolen from this book. So I thoroughly second Sherry's recommendation of it. It is a book that looks at the heart of Jesus, and it is so, so good. If you've read it already, sorry if I repeat stuff that you already know, but it's probably a good reminder. So Sherry, sorry, I'm going to repeat stuff you already know, but it's a good reminder. Okay, where have I got to? Sorry, I've gone off script, can't find where I am. So what Dane points out, Dane Ortland, in this book, is that this is actually the only verse in the Bible where Jesus opens up to us what his very heart is like, his very nature. And if we think about it, it's actually really remarkable. If you were to finish the rest of that statement, the very heart of Jesus is, dot, 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 what would you put? Maybe you'd put the very heart of Jesus is gracious and holy. Or the very heart of Jesus is perfect and righteous. Or the very heart of Jesus is glorious and demands obedience. But that's not what Jesus says. Jesus says, "Come to me, for I am gentle and lowly." Let me read to you what Dane says about the meaning of the word gentle. Find the right page. He says, "Meek, humble, gentle. Jesus is not trigger happy, not harsh, reactionary, easily exasperated. He is the most understanding person in the universe. The posture most natural to him is not a pointed finger, but open arms." Isn't that beautiful? The posture most natural to Jesus is not pointing the finger at us and accusing us and chastising us. No, when Jesus invites us to come to him, he is there with open arms. "Come to me." Is that how you think of him waiting for you? Honestly, when I think of how Jesus would greet me, it's with this disappointed expression on his face. That kind of, "Wow, I knew you'd make a mess of things." Or, "Couldn't you have tried a bit harder?" But that's not what his heart is. Jesus' heart is gentle. His heart is meek and kind. What about lowly or humble? What does that mean? Well, in the Bible, the humble are the unimpressive, the lowest in society, the ones who don't lord it over others, the poor, the ones who put others' needs first. And we know that Jesus humbled himself even to become a man. In Philippians 2, verses 6 to 8, we read, "Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges, and he took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being." Jesus left the glory of heaven and his position at the right hand of God to come and dwell amongst us. That's the essence of his humility. But he didn't come to a high-ranking family. He didn't mingle with the great and the good of society. He didn't even come and take his rightful position as king. No, he was born in a stable and laid in a feeding trough. He belonged to a lowly carpenter's family. He was amongst the poorest in society. He had to earn his keep. He probably had to muck out the animals, help with the dishes. And because he came in humility, we can approach him. Can you imagine how different it would have been if he was a lord or a duke or even royalty? Would we have been able to get near him? Or would he have been shielded from the poor and the lowly in society? Jesus came in humility and lowliness so that he could be among us. Jesus truly made himself one of us so that he is relatable, within our reach, accessible to us. Let me steal from Dane Ortland again. For all his resplendent glory and dazzling holiness, his supreme uniqueness and otherness, no one in human history has ever been more approachable than Jesus Christ. No prerequisites, no hoops to jump through. The minimum bar to be enfolded into the embrace of Jesus is simply open yourself up to him. This is who he is: tender, open, welcoming, accommodating, understanding, willing. This is who he is for those who come to him, who open up their heart to him, who are vulnerable and real with him. This is who is inviting you to come: Jesus, gentle and lowly. But listen, we don't have to take Dane Ortland's word for it. We don't even have to rely on just one verse in the Bible. We can see the heart of Jesus as we read through the Gospels themselves and watch his response to those that came to him. If we look at Matthew, skip back if you've got your Bibles open. I'm not going to do huge amounts of reading, but just to prove this point, if you skip back to chapter 8, verse 1, large crowds followed Jesus as he came down the mountainside. Suddenly a man with leprosy approached him and knelt before him. Jesus reached out and touched him. I am willing. Jesus heals him. Verse 5, when Jesus returned to Capernaum, a Roman officer came and pleaded with him, Lord, my young servant lies in bed. Jesus said, I'll come and heal him. Chapter 8, verse 14, when Jesus arrived at Peter's house, Peter's mother-in-law was sick in bed with a high fever. But when Jesus touched her hand, the fever left her. Jesus heals her. Verse 16, that evening, many demon-possessed people were brought to Jesus. He cast out the evil spirits with a simple command, and he healed all the sick, everyone that came to him. In verse 28, he arrives on the other side of the lake in the region of the Gadarenes, and two men who are possessed by demons meet him, and he heals them both. Chapter 9, verse 1, he climbs out of the boat and went back across the lake to his own town, and some people brought to him a paralyzed man on a mat. And he said, be encouraged, my child, your sins are forgiven. And then he heals him. Verse 18 of chapter 9, as Jesus was saying this, the leader of a synagogue ruler came and knelt before him. My daughter has just died, he said, but I know you can bring her back to life. So Jesus changes his plans and goes to find the daughter, and he raises her from the dead. But on the way, in verse 22, a woman touches him, and he heals her, and he says, daughter, be encouraged. You weren't brave enough to stand in front of everyone, but you've touched me, and you are healed. Verse 27, over the page, after Jesus left the girl's home, two blind men followed him along the road, shouting, Son of David, have mercy on us, and he healed them. Chapter 9, what have we got to? 27, he heals a blind man. 35, Jesus travelled through all the towns and villages of that area, teaching in the synagogues and announcing the good news about the kingdom, and he healed every kind of disease and illness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were confused and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. His heart of compassion, he's gentle and lowly, he heals everybody that comes to him. We'll skip over to chapter 12 and verse 15. Let me read that out for you. But Jesus knew what they were planning, so he left the area and many people followed him. He healed all the sick among them, but he warned them not to reveal who he was. This fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah concerning him. Look at my servant whom I have chosen. He is my beloved who pleases me. I will put my spirit upon him and he will proclaim justice to the nations. He will not fight or shout or raise his voice in public. He will not crush the weakest reed or put out a flickering candle. Finally, he will cause justice to be victorious, and his name will be the hope of all the world. That quote from Isaiah 42 is about Jesus. He will not crush the weakest reed or put out a flickering candle. He hasn't come to crush and snuff us out. Jesus will take care of the most useless. A bruised and broken reed in those days was useless. It would have been used for weaving or for making a thatched roof or something. If it was bruised, if it was broken, it would have been just tossed in the fire. That's not what Jesus does. He won't even put out a flickering flame. You know, when you get to the very bottom of the candle and it's basically just kind of sputtering and not giving any light, really. It's pathetic, the light that it gives. But even if someone is like that coming to Jesus, half-dead candle on its last legs, he'll not turn them away. He'll not snuff them out. There isn't a single account of someone coming to Jesus and him saying, sorry, I'm a bit busy. Or I just don't have time for this right now. I'm on my way to go preach. No one is turned away. All the sick are healed. All the possessed are freed. And he doesn't make an example of anyone. He doesn't wag the finger and tell them, you should have done better, shouldn't you? He doesn't quietly rebuke them or give them a stern look. I guess it doesn't tell us what he looked like, but I'm imagining he wouldn't give them a stern look. He has compassion on every single person that comes to him in whatever state they are, bruised, failing, flickering out. His heart is gentle and lowly and full of compassion. Welcoming, understanding, tender with open arms. This is the Jesus who says, come to me. Jesus wants us to come to him whatever state we're in. He wants the sick and the hurting. He wants the sinners and the broken, the disillusioned and the downhearted. He came as a doctor to the sick, not the self-righteous. His heart is of compassion, gentle and lowly. Means that when he sees us in our state of sin or distraction or laziness or busyness or pride, he moves towards us, not away, not recoiling from us. He meets us in our struggle. Whatever the weary burdens are that we are carrying, that's where he wants to be. He's not going to wait for you to smarten up your act, pull up your socks, maybe make a New Year's resolution to spend an hour in prayer every morning. He doesn't need you to do that. He just wants you to come. Come as you are, wherever you are. Come and spend time with me. Come and pour your heart out to me. Come and tell me about your day. Come and be with me. Well, you might be thinking, what about the sterner side of Jesus? The harsh and condemning words he has for the Pharisees. The anger he shows in the temple as he turns over the tables. The woes he pronounces on unrepentant cities. He says some pretty tough stuff, doesn't he? How does that fit with the gentle and lowly heart of Jesus? Will he respond like that to me and my sin? Well, what I would say is that we first and foremost see his compassion and his gentleness for the lost. That is his heart. He's reaching out, he's teaching them, he's drawing them in, he's demonstrating his compassion and gentleness. However, the sterner words are for those who don't come to him. Those who in arrogance and pride think that they can practice their own religion and make themselves right with God. Jesus' passion for purity and holiness is so strong that we see his gentle and lowly heart enraged by those who would mislead others and defile and deny God. And it is a right response to all those who reject him and think that they're better off without Jesus. But even at the end of all that, we still see the gentleness of his heart. If you flick forward to Matthew chapter 23, towards the end of Jesus' ministry on earth, this is what he says, if I can find it. Chapter 23 and verse 37. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones God's messengers. There's his anger. How often I have wanted to gather your children together as a hen protects her chicks beneath her wings, but you wouldn't let me. Even in the midst of those hard and judgment words, Jesus still is saying, I just want you to come to me. But they wouldn't. Jesus never turns away anyone that comes to him. He is waiting with open arms. That's who he is, the heart of Jesus. But why else should we come to Jesus? The second thing is the experience of Jesus. Now, it's always a good interview question, isn't it? What experience do you have that would qualify you for this job? So let's ask Jesus, what experience do you have that means it's worth me coming to you and accepting your invitation? Well, Debbie read to us earlier Hebrews chapter 4, verses 14 to 16. And they tell us why we can come to Jesus, and it's because he knows exactly what it's like to be me. Let me just read verse 15 out for you. This high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all of the same testings we do, yet he did not sin. This high priest of ours, that's Jesus, understands our weaknesses, for he faced all the same testings or temptations we do, yet he did not sin. Jesus isn't some far-off God who doesn't understand the human condition. Far from it. Not only does he understand what we are like, he's been through it. He has walked the path of being a human. He's been tired, hungry, thirsty, in pain, frustrated, lonely, too hot, too cold, sore feet at the end of a long day, splinters from all his carpentry, overwhelmed with so many demands on him, disillusioned, disappointed, let down by others. He knows exactly what it is to be weary and burdened in every way. But you might be thinking, yeah, but he was Jesus, so it's not the same. He never sinned. He never gave in to the temptations. He had the power of God helping him. So how can he really know what it's like for me? Well, actually, Jesus' sinlessness, it's hard to say all those S's, means that he knows temptation better than we do ourselves. C.S. Lewis wrote a book called Mere Christianity, and in that he helpfully illustrates temptation. And he says that facing temptation is like a man walking into a really, or a woman, let's say woman, walking into a really, really strong wind and kind of battling against this. And when the wind gets too strong, she just lies down, gives in. The wind is too strong, I'm just going to lie down. And therefore, she never knows what it would have been like in 10 minutes' time. It's just like us facing temptation. It's too much, I'm just going to give in. But Jesus, facing those same winds, never laid down. He kept on going against the wind. He endured all the temptations and testings without ever giving in and lying down. So do you see that he truly knows the strength of temptations? Only he knows exactly what it's like to endure to the end, to go right through. Only he knows the full cost of not giving in to temptation and just lying down. That's why he can understand our weaknesses. That's why he knows the burdens of temptation and the struggles of sin. And that's why he can truly sympathize with us. Therefore, Hebrews 4 verse 16 says this, let us come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. Boldly, not timidly, not, ooh, do you mind if I just have a minute? Boldly. There we will receive his mercy, and we will find grace to help us when we need it most. Come to Jesus. He understands you. He's able to sympathize with it all. He knows the burdens you're under and the struggles that you face. He knows them better than you do. He's not waiting to judge or condemn you. He's not going to give you a pep talk. He just wants you to come. And he will climb down into that pit with you and bear your burdens. And that leads us on to the final reason for coming to Jesus. He's actually the only one that can help us. I'm going to get my mother-in-law, Marion, to come and read to us Isaiah 53. Most of it is on your handouts, but the last few verses didn't fit. So I think Marion will read all of it. Now, as Marion reads this to us, if you've got a pen, grab it and just underline or highlight anything that you think shows us the heart of Jesus and shows us the experience of Jesus, okay? So it's a English literature exercise for you, okay? So the heart of Jesus or the experience of Jesus. Thank you, Marion.
Right. Isaiah 53. Who has believed our message? To whom has the Lord revealed his powerful arm? My servant grew up in the Lord's presence like a tender green shoot, like a root in dry ground. There was nothing beautiful or majestic about his appearance, nothing to attract us to him. He was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows, acquainted with deepest grief. We turned our backs on him and looked the other way. He was despised and we did not care. Yet it was our weaknesses he carried. It was our sorrows that weighed him down. And we thought his troubles were a punishment from God, a punishment for his own sins. But he was pierced for our rebellion, crushed for our sins. He was beaten so we could be whole. He was whipped so we could be healed. All of us, like sheep, have strayed away. We have left God's paths to follow our own, yet the Lord laid on him the sins of us all. He was oppressed and treated harshly, yet he never said a word. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep is silent before the shearers, he did not open his mouth. Unjustly condemned, he was led away. No one cared that he died without descendants, that his life was cut short in midstream. But he was struck down for the rebellion of my people. He had done no wrong and had never deceived anyone. But he was buried like a criminal. He was put in a rich man's grave. But it was the Lord's good plan to crush him and cause him grief. Yet, when his life is made an offering for sin, he will have many descendants. He will enjoy a long life, and the Lord's good plan will prosper in his hands. When he sees all that is accomplished by his anguish, he will be satisfied. And because of his experience, my righteous servant will make it possible for many to be counted righteous, for he will bear all their sins. I will give him the honors of a victorious soldier because he exposed himself to death. He was counted among the rebels. He bore the sins of many and interceded for rebels.
Thank you, Marion. Why don't you just take a minute or two or three or four to chat to the person next to you about that chapter. How does it show you the heart of Jesus and the experience of Jesus? Just have a little chat about what you noticed in that passage. Long enough, isn't it? Oh, women can just talk forever. Does anyone feel like sharing what they've picked up from that chapter at all? Anything that you spotted about Jesus' heart or his experience?
Well, I think the whole passage is based, I'll just pick the whole lot. As you were, Marion was reading, because it's like every line, isn't it, is the experience, what he's been through, mm-hmm. which is with the whole passage. Mm. That he's there, been there, done that, gone through it to the end. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got the whole passage. Anyone want to offer up anything more specific? Yeah, that's really helpful. Selfless, withheld nothing but gave everything.
It's really quite bleak for him in one sense. I don't think bleak is quite the right word, but despised, rejected, pierced, crushed, beaten, whipped, oppressed.
Sorry, what was that?
Silent.
Yeah.
And yet he took all of that. I mean, injustice is such a thing that makes you raise up with, and fight it. Mm-hmm. He just went through all of that. Mm.
And didn't utter a word.
Not a word.
We feel quite sorry for ourselves if we experience one of those things.
I feel sorry for myself when someone parks in my space. Very personal, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about how, it wasn't just at the cross, but the first few verses, how he grew up in dry ground. He had a hard life before the cross, and there was nothing beautiful or majestic about his appearance, and it wasn't like he had, like some super kind of body or whatever. He was very ordinary and had all those
He wasn't superhuman.
No.
Well, he was because he was God, but you know what I mean. Anything else anybody wants to share? But even with our kids, it's hard to love them when they're rebellious, isn't it? Did you want to say something in the back? And in a deeper way than we do, because he understands all of it. I think when we feel grief, we're just quite, this sounds awful to say, but we're in ourselves, aren't we? It's about me, it's about how am I feeling. But he understands the whole big picture. Yeah. It's wrong.
Yeah.
3, it says if we turned our backs on him and looked the other way, he was despised and we did not care. It's almost like today in this present time, you know, do we turn the other way? Do we not care? Because he came for us, specifically for us, and he went through what we've all mentioned here after a terrible time. But the fact that we ought to carry on that mission and not turn the other way and not ignore what we see as Christians, to sort of be totally rejected by the people who came into the earth to say that they turned their backs on and they didn't want to know.
Yeah.
That must have hurt so, so much.
Yeah.
That he was a loving God that wanted to save
all
of them, but they didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. Thank you. Well, you've said it all, really. Again, you've done all the work, which is great. what did I spot when I was looking at this? It's just a beautiful... Honestly, just spend some time in this chapter. There's so much in it. The evidence of his gentle and lowly heart. Well, like Sherry said, there's nothing beautiful or majestic about him. He's just an ordinary, lowly bloke. Nothing particularly special to look at. He was oppressed and treated harshly in verse 7, and yet he never says a word. Not like us. We would stand up and fight. He never says a word. He doesn't open his mouth. Even in the brutality of his treatment and torture, he remains gentle and lowly. Like a lamb, one of the most gentlest, most innocent animals of all. What about his experience? Well, we've already mentioned all these. Verse 3, despised, rejected, acquainted with the deepest grief. He knows how we're feeling. He knows what it's like, and then some. Verse 8 and 9, no one cared that he'd died. No one cared that his life was cut short. He was buried like a criminal. Has he not experienced the worst of human experience? He's qualified, isn't he, to understand what it's like to be us. But here's the beauty of it in verse 10. But it was the Lord's good plan to crush him. Not to crush us, to crush Jesus. It's all part of the good plan. That he might carry our weaknesses and our sorrows. That he might be pierced for our rebellion and crushed for our sin. I'd never sort of spotted verse 5 before. At the end of verse 5 it says, he was beaten so we could be whole. He was whipped so we could be healed. That's just beautiful. He's done it all. The Lord has laid on Jesus the sins of us all. He's taken it. He has borne the punishment. It's all dealt with. He's endured the brokenness, the burdens, the weariness, the guilt, the shame, the hurts, so that we don't have to do anything but come to him. He has saved us. He has rescued us. He has redeemed us. He has bought us with his blood. He has forgiven us. He has made us clean. He alone has reached down into the pit and pulled us out. So why would we go anywhere else but run into the arms of this gentle and lowly Saviour who has sacrificed everything for us? There is nothing that you can do to make Jesus love you less. There's no sin or burden that you can't bring to him. There's no weakness that he will turn away. Let me finish with another little quote from Dane, Mr. Ortland, doing so well at plugging this book. God's forgiving, redeeming, restoring touch reaches down into the darkest crevices of our souls, those places where we are most ashamed, most defeated. More than this, those crevices of sin are themselves the places where Christ loves us the most. His heart willingly goes there. His heart is most strongly drawn there. He knows us to the uttermost, and he saves us to the uttermost, because his heart is drawn out to us to the uttermost. We cannot sin our way out of his tender care. Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Are you burdened by guilt and shame? Are you trying to make yourself right before you come to Jesus? Don't. Don't do that. Just come as you are. His arms are open. We've got a few minutes for you to talk back in your groups, or maybe just think on your own. What difference does it make to you knowing who Jesus is? What difference will it make to you coming to him, knowing who Jesus is? Take a minute.